Dr. Birch, how is the orchestra managed?
The orchestra is managed by a board of trustees made up of citizens of this community. These are elected for 2 years and are taken from various groups. The sustaining membership, the subscribing membership, playing memberships, and then there are four each year appointed at large by the membership of the board. Mrs. Lita Snow is a permanent member of the board, and the president of the Women's Association also serves. The board elects its officers from among this group. They employ a manager and a conductor. They establish policy. They deal with the orchestra contracts and care for its properties. They establish a budget and try to stay within it.
Well, now, how large is this year's budget, Dr. Birch?
The budget is approximately $21,000. It can't be completely fixed because there are some items which change.
Is that budget covered by the sale of memberships?
Primarily, yes. There are sustaining memberships, subscribing memberships. There are also season and student tickets. We also obtain some of our funds from the sale of advertising in programs and from special donations.
Do you anticipate that you're going to be able to cover that $21,000 budget this year?
It's always a problem. It's a very hard problem for us to raise the satisfactory and sufficient amount of funds. This is not unique with the Kalamazoo Symphony. It is, as a matter of fact, present with all orchestras.
Yes, I noticed that even the New York Philharmonic Symphony is anticipating a $150,000 deficit this year. So the difficulties that you have financially, Dr. Birch, as you say, are not confined to Kalamazoo. The orchestra here consists of amateurs and professionals playing together, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
How did you happen to include a couple of Friday evening concerts this year?
We hope to meet more people and make the concerts available to a larger cross-section of Kalamazoo. There are those who have Sunday commitments who feel that they cannot give these up or don't desire to change them. And we feel that by having two evening concerts, we'll be able to get to more people.
Well, we're certainly thank you, Dr. Birch, for taking time out to come up here and represent the orchestra. And I think you should know that the city owes a debt of gratitude to you and your associates on the Board of Trustees for all the time and effort that you devote to this worthy cause. Also with us here for this broadcast is Miss Colleen Cosgrove, who is the orchestra manager. I want her to say a word. Miss Cosgrove, I believe this is your second year in Kalamazoo, isn't it?
That's right.
Are you enjoying your work?
Oh, I like it very much, and I love Kalamazoo.
If I'm not mistaken, you toot a horn in the orchestra as well as manage dollars and cents, don't you?
That's right. And most of the horn players are my students, too.
Is that so? Miss Cosgrove, when is the first concert?
Friday evening at 8 o'clock, October 20th.
And I suppose that the membership drive which you've been having sort of points up to that first concert, doesn't it?
That's right, it does. And I might say here that we would appreciate having more of the reports in. We've had about half so far, and it's very important that we get the rest of those reports in.
Good, and the best of luck to you, Miss Cosgrove, and to the orchestra. The company whose plant in Battle Creek we are to visit this evening is one of the top five manufacturers of farm machinery in the nation. The Oliver Corporation currently is employing about 1,000 people in its Battle Creek plant. The largest production items there are combines and corn pickers, but the corporation in its other plants throughout the nation manufactures a complete line of farm equipment and machinery. Oliver dealers are scattered throughout the length and breadth of this land, and when I visited the Battle Creek plant a few days back, I observed several big wooden boxes securely nailed and bound for shipment abroad. I learned that a percentage of Oliver farm machinery has been shipped under the ECA plan to such countries as France, Belgium, Turkey, Palestine, and many others. For more than 100 years, farm machinery has been manufactured in Battle Creek. The large plant now used by the Oliver Corporation had its origins way back in the year 1848, when John Nichols opened a blacksmith shop and began to manufacture in that shop a small iron foundry and a small iron foundry, farm implements for farmers in the immediate vicinity. The next year, Nichols joined the 49ers in the great trek across the continent to California. He didn't find gold, but he found something vastly more important than gold, an idea. He visualized what the Western Plains would one day be, a great wheat field, the breadbasket of the nation. And he foresaw there would be a wonderful opportunity for business enterprise in building the threshers, which would be required to produce all that grain. He came back to Battle Creek, and working with nothing more than his crude blacksmith's tools, he built his first thrasher. It was crude, but it was the best thrasher that had been built up to that time. The news of that thrasher soon spread, and the demand for more of them grew. So Nichols formed a partnership with David Shepherd and organized the firm of Nichols, Shepherd & Company. Somewhat later, in 1886, the firm turned to a corporate form, presumably to acquire more capital. And as Nichols & Shepherd Company, it received charter number one under the laws of the state of Michigan. To power the thrashers, steam engines were built, and later on, tractors. The year 1902 is notable in the company's history because it was in that year that the first Red River Special thrasher was built. Now that thrasher thrashed grain as it had never been thrashed before. The principle by which the grain was separated from the chaff was different, resulting in the saving of much more of the grain. Almost overnight, the Red River stood for the ultimate and good thrashing and cleaning. Immediately after the First World War, Nichols & Shepherd built its first all-steel thrasher, and in the early 20s, the first combines and corn pickers were turned out. Today, the Battle Creek plant of the Oliver Corporation still specializes in harvesting machinery of all kinds. The corporation which now operates the old Nichols & Shepherd business had its origin not so many miles away from Battle Creek. It was in Mishawaka and South Bend, Indiana, that James Oliver, a Scotch immigrant, played a role in revolutionizing the plow with his discovery of the Oliver chilled plow. Now, the plows generally in use prior to the year 1840 were little better than those used by the Roman farmers or by the Israelites in 1100 BC, of whom it is written that they went down to the Philistines to sharpen every man his share and his coulter. The dire need for better plows came about when the pioneers tackled the problem of tilling the tough prairie soils of the great Middle West. The old plows would turn the sod all right, but the following year, the iron-patched wooden plows and cast-iron plows failed to shed the soil properly, or, as the farmer put it, they wouldn't scour. The need for a plow that would scour was met by the all-steel plow. Among the pioneers in the development of the steel plow were John Deere and John Lane. But the greatest improvement came about in 1855, when James Oliver of Mishawaka, Indiana, came out with the first chilled steel plow. He first chilled the iron to get hardness, made a smooth surface, and then annealed it to give it the necessary hardness. From its bright surface, the earth turned in long, even furrows. It sang as it moved through the soil, and it reduced the draft on the team from 20% to 50%. This development marked the beginning of the corporation which today bears the Oliver name. In South Bend, there are two big Oliver plants making plows, cultivating equipment, weeders, and hay tools. At Springfield, Ohio, Oliver makes planters, drills, seeders, and manure spreaders. And at Shelbyville, Illinois, pickup hay and straw balers and stationary balers are manufactured. Tractors and engines are made at the Oliver plant in Charles City, Iowa, while at Cleveland, Ohio, industrial as well as agricultural crawler-type tractors and power units are made. Since the end of World War II, the production of farm machinery has been tremendous. Some idea of the growth is given by noting that in 1946, the first year after World War II, the Oliver plant over in Battle Creek turned out about 3,000 units. While in the fiscal year 1951, production is expected to exceed 10,800 units, more than a threefold increase in a single five-year period. The manufacture of farm machinery in America is today big business. During the first three quarters of the present fiscal year, Oliver Corporation sales amounted to $68 million. If the same rate is maintained, that would mean sales of $100 million for the year. So far, the war has not much affected Oliver farm equipment production, I was told. Throughout World War II, the production of farm equipment continued as a necessity to a certain extent, although large quantities of military material were also turned out by farm machinery firms like Oliver. I'll be back in a moment with a description of what I saw when I visited the Oliver plant in Battle Creek a few days ago. While I take a breather, here is Al Cook speaking for White Sales. The first thing they told me about at Oliver in Battle Creek was their strong emphasis on safety. They're mighty proud of their safety record, and deservedly so. Up to September the 14th this year, the plant had 590 days of operation without an accident causing anyone to lose time. That amounted to 2,800,000 man-hours, an enviable record. In the plant are some 65 members of Local 444 UAW-AFL, which make up safety and first aid squads. They're under the supervision of Ed Hessmer, the safety director. I was interested in a display case showing safety equipment provided employees, glasses, gloves, shoes, and many other items. And by the way, through the American Optical Company, the Oliver Corporation, that is providing free eye tests for all employees and is furnishing prescription glasses wherever they're needed. My guide through the plant, Mr. Rich, told me that they consider good housekeeping one of the important elements in the safety program. The moment we entered the plant, I was impressed by that good housekeeping. The floors were not littered by debris. They were swept cleanly. Yellow paint marked the areas where materials waiting to be processed were kept and the aisles through which fights and other materials handling equipment traveled. The predominating color in the plant was green, and I learned that Oliver products are all painted green with a red trim. The first place we visited was the wood shop, and I was surprised to find out how many farm equipment parts are made out of wood. The guide chains and elevator runs on a corn picker, for instance, the shaker in a combine, and many other parts. Mostly hardwoods are used, basswood, maple, oak, hickory, and elm. Passing along to the sheet metal department, I saw a lot of arc welding and spot welding going on. Welding, I was told, has replaced bolts and nuts to a great degree in this business. There were some very large presses. One I saw is capable of exerting 400 tons pressure. Our next stop was at the assembly line, a very interesting place, where corn pickers were being turned out. The pickers were being carried along on special wheels drawn by a moving chain, and each worker added some part or some set of parts to the mechanism as it went past his station. About halfway through the line, the picker entered what was called the test floor and hospital. Here a motor was attached to it, and it actually was run while the doctor inspected it and checked sick parts, so to speak, for adjustment and replacement. At the end of the line, the picker goes through the spray paint booth and so out to the warehouse. They're being prepared for domestic and foreign shipment. I was impressed by the program of quality control in the plant. Now, this is something just a bit different than I had noted in the typical plant in the way of control research. Just how it works is, well, a little difficult to explain, but in a general way, it's like this. The floor inspectors check periodically the performance of the machines in the plant. On many of the parts, there are limits of tolerance. So long as the machine turns out parts within those limits, all is well. But if measurements indicate that these limits are being violated, then the part is apt to give trouble. To prevent that, the machine's performance is graphically charted, perhaps every hour. If the chart indicates that the part's measurements are getting, say, progressively bigger, well, then it may indicate that a cutting tool is wearing and that it should be sharpened or replaced. The charts, I was told, make workers aware of the performance of their machines and alert to prevent faulty production. Mr. J.R. Moley, who was the plant manager at Oliver in Battle Creek, is quite a sports-minded fellow, and he's done a great deal to encourage the organization of plant teams. For 4 years running, the Oliver basketball team has won the City Recreation League championship, and last year it was crowned as state champion. In passing through the plant, I met a number of men who have been with the company for many, many years. There was, for example, Max Chase, who for almost 53 years has been a blacksmith at Oliver. There was Lou Parrott, the traffic manager, who has been on the job at Oliver for 41 years. There was Clyde Rose, a sheet metal layout specialist, who has an employment record of almost 50 years. And Ernie Graw, a pattern man in the steel shop. He's the third man that I learned was rounding out half a century as an Oliver employee. There was Al Stabe, who is the chief millwright in the maintenance department and has a record of 37 years of service.